You know, if you suffer from some disease and you go to a doctor, the doctor of necessity will try to diagnose the disease by asking you a million and one questions about your background and so forth in order to understand your present condition. And that, more or less, is an accepted procedure now in any of the sciences. And we being social scientists, in wanting to discuss the role of the Roman Catholic Church today, we have to understand its background and how it got to where it is today, so that we can foretell its doom tomorrow. Now, Christianity started out, as we know, almost 2,000 years ago, as the religion of the poor people, of the down and outers. That is more or less substantiated, in fact, now, for the first time in history, by the reading of the Dead Sea Scrolls, which were discovered only a few years ago. And these scrolls confirm everything that has been said and written by socialists about the founding of Christianity. That is, that at the time of Christ, there was in existence a group of primitive communists, Jews, who based their livelihood on agriculture, called the Essenes. And they were rebels against society of their day. And it was out of this kind of an organization that Jesus was supposed to have come, as well as his disciples. So that their whole world outlook was one of poor down and outers. And their whole philosophy and outlook on life was one of rebellion and one of primitive communism. Now, alongside of this, there were many other religions popping up all over the landscape in those days because of the oppression of the Roman Empire, plus the fact that at that time, economic conditions were on the downhill, downgrade. In fact, during that period of time, in the 100 years previous to the coming of Christ, in that period of time, the gold money of Rome, I believe they call it the solidus, was debased twice, which gives you an inkling of the downgrade of economic conditions in those days. But out of all the God chasers of those days, Christianity triumphed. And by the year 330 to be exact, and I'll give all my figures in round numbers when I talk of dates, because I don't believe that the knowledge of history consists of knowing dates and such foolish things as that, and marriages and divorces and so forth, as the brilliant scholars used to write about until the materialism or the Russian Revolution made them change their writings about history and start to interpret it from an economic point of view instead of the great man theory. Well, by the year 330, Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire when Constantine declared it to be so. And if you didn't believe in that and you didn't accept it, well, he had means and measures to make you accept that. But by this time, Roman Catholicism, or whatever we used to call it, Christianity, had been completely bureaucratized. It was no longer the religion of the poor people, or else Constantine would never have accepted it. The mere fact that the Roman government accepted it means that it had grown up, you might say. It had matured. Now it was fully corrupted, and it was accepted by the powers that be. In other words, the religion was now the religion that was accepted by the rich as well as the poor. And it was completely bureaucratized. Now we have to remember that, bureaucratized. What is a bureaucracy? A bureaucracy is a grouping inside of any organization that's made up of unprincipled officials of that organization who have only one purpose in belonging to that organization, and that is to be parasites on it and to get their livelihood out of it. Principles mean nothing to these kind of people. All they live on is one principle, and that is get yours and the hell with the rest. That applies to the Roman Catholic Cardinal of today. That applies to the Russian bureaucrat of the Communist Party. That applies to the officials of the American Federation of Labor and the CIO. And it applies to the politicians in the United States. They're interested in no principles. Principles mean nothing. It's to get theirs and to hell with the rest. Now, this was the kind of an organization that developed inside Roman Catholicism or Christianity in the early days by the year 300. And by this time, it had turned into its opposite. It was the religion of the powers that be and the religion of the wealthy. And this whole flip-flop was rationalized by the great Saint Augustine, as the Roman Catholics call him. He was a gentleman that came from the idle rich of his day and turned late in life, relatively late in life, to Catholicism. And he was the boy that created the ideology that equalized or synchronized the ideology of the early Christians, which said, blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, and so forth and so on, high in the sky, you know. And the idea that the rich could also be members of this great religion that promised a heaven in the future. That the rich were okay, which was absolutely contrary to the early teachings of Christianity, which said that it's easier for the rich man that it was impossible for a rich man to get through the eye of a needle or something like that. As it was the chance of getting into heaven. Now Christianity has completely changed. It is no longer the oppressed. It is no longer the hounded, the executed, thrown to the lions by the Roman emperors. But now it is the oppressor. It is the religion of the government. It is the religion of the powers that be, of the big landowners. And all other religions are now outlawed by the government and put to the sword. This is how Christianity turned itself into its opposite. Now from the year 600, let us say, with the collapse of the Roman Empire, until the year 1200, when commerce was once more reviving, and commerce between the East and the West, that is Asia Minor and Western Europe, was once more returned to normal, with the pushing back of Islamism, came a period called the Dark Ages in Europe. This was a period when Europe lived in ignorance. There was a complete collapse of education to what was once the Roman Empire in Europe. We might say this the part of the Roman Empire that was dominated by Christianity. Noblemen could neither read nor write. All learning was confined to the monasteries and the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church. Or Christianity, as we wish to call it. And it was in this period that Christianity played its only progressive role in its entire lifetime. That is, that it preserved the little spark of learning that remained in Western civilization from 600 to about 1100 or 1200. But with the rise of capitalism through the revival of trade with the East, came the creation and the development of a new condition in society. We may say that from 600 up to 1600, that Western Europe was dominated by feudalism, by an agricultural society in which each and every individual in that society was in a fixed class. You were born a peasant, just the same as your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was, and your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren will be. You were born a nobleman, the same as your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was. And you're going to be a nobleman, your great-great-great-grandson is going to be a nobleman, and so forth. Everything was fixed. You were born of a cardinal, and if you're a good boy, Daddy will see that you succeed him as a cardinal. He might make you a cardinal when you're 6 years old, as was the fashion in those days. Now, this kind of a society had to have a philosophy that justified itself with this form of society. And it was during this period of feudalism that Christianity adopted Aristotelian philosophy. The logic of Aristotle, the logic of fixed rules, as we might say, of the syllogism, which justifies the end. And this was perfect for this kind of a society. A can never equal something else. A is A, and that's all there is to it. A peasant cannot be a nobleman. It's impossible, because A equals A and nothing else. A nobleman cannot be a peasant, and so on. And it was in this kind of a period, in feudalism, that Christianity had its golden age. It was the age of superstition and ignorance and backwardness of Western Europe. The church ruled supreme. The nobility was subject to the church as far as its titles and its rights were concerned. It was in this period that the church laid down its democratic rights. When they talk of democracy today, we can remind them of their democracy of the feudal ages. When they laid down the democratic principle to everybody in society, that they have the right to think as they please, provided it's the way the church wants them to think. And they had torture, refined right down to the nth degree, to convince anybody that didn't agree with the principles of Christianity. They created the Inquisition, not only in Spain, but all over Western Europe of those days. Nevertheless, despite the power that they had, that is the Christian hierarchy, despite the power they had through superstition and the domination of the ignorant through superstition, and don't forget, many of the nobility were ignorant and backward and superstitious, they were dominated by the great feudal landlords. There were exceptions, true enough. But in general, the feudal landlords, except for a very brief period, dominated the church and appointed the cardinals, the popes, and so on up and down the line. Naturally, on their own land, they were the ones that picked out the local priest who was to be feed the dope to the peasantry on the land. This was the period that practically all the popes, the bishops, and the cardinals came from the feudal landlords. This was the period when the clergy bled the sinners to death, particularly on their deathbed. They bled them to death with the threats of hell and the hopes of paradise. And under feudalism, the church wealth grew at the expense of the lords whom they bled to death on the deathbed. And this, of course, created some antagonisms in society between the clergy and the feudal lords. This also laid the groundwork for enticing a large section of the feudal lords to come over and fight side by side with the rising bourgeoisie in order to destroy feudalism, because they recognized that the church had practically stolen their land from their ancestors on the deathbed of their ancestors. Out in feudalism, the church was fantastically wealthy and fantastically corrupt. As I pointed out, the leadership of the church came from the nobility. There was only two careers opened up for the sons of the noblemen, and they were the army or the clergy. What was the name of the Frenchman that wrote the book, Black and White? Red and White, was it? Stendhal. No. He points out, in that book you see the whole story there of the conflict of the career for the nobleman, to the nobleman's son. They either went in the army or into the church. As I said before, many cardinals and bishops were made those offices, came into those offices when they were little children, 6 years of age in some cases, while others 7, 8, 10 years of age. Ferdinand of Spain, the Count of Toledo, became cardinal in Spain at the age of 10 years of age. Now, this is one of the great mysteries that you and I don't understand, but God arranged all these things. Alongside of their immense wealth was their immense brutality. This is the period, as I said before, when the Inquisition reigned supreme. And naturally, the church, being immensely wealthy, was also the bulwark and defender of feudalism. That is, they were the defenders of the oppressors of our ancestors. And they concocted, just as they have all kinds of laws and call on the spiritual beings for the protection of private property today, in those days they discovered the law of divine right, that the nobleman was created by God to be a nobleman and to exercise divine right over his and control over his peasant. The king was king by God's divine right. He had no control over himself. God made him king, and that's all there is to it. And there was a little touch of predestination, of course, in the whole philosophy of Catholicism, and this was mainly concocted by St. Augustine in the 4th century, around 430. This was also the period when Christianity showed its great tolerance toward humanity by dealing with any and all rebels against Christianity in a very humane fashion. For instance, when the Bohemian peasantry, under the leadership of John Huss, raised a few questions about theology, they invited this gentleman to come to Geneva and have a little powwow. Well, he came to Geneva and he didn't have to go to anywhere else after that, because they put him to the fire. They burned him to death. This was the period when the height of when ignorance was running wild and superstition was supreme, that the Holy Fathers thought it was a great thing to burn the Library of Alexandria, which contained many of the great works of the ancient Greeks. In fact, when the job wasn't finished, Pope Gregory I thought it was one of his duties to finish off the work, and thereby burning all the writings of the early Greek materialists. Works were in the Library of Alexandria. This is the period when Copernicus discovered that the earth was not the center of the universe, but rather that the son was. But being a pretty shrewd man, he kept quiet about it, except to a small circle of his friends. When one of them did speak out, like Giordano Gregory, they just took him and put him to the stake and burnt him. See, we don't want to think that the American Indians were the first ones that discovered burning somebody at the stake. The Christians taught them that, just the same as the Christians taught them how to scalp people. You know, the early pilgrims put a bounty on it and told the Indians, you bring in these scalps and we'll pay you off. Galileo, with his development of the telescope, proved conclusively that Copernicus was correct. And he was foolish enough to publicize it. Well, they had a powwow with Galileo and said, hey, now you don't mean that, do you? He said, no, I don't think so. So he lived. Now this was the period when everything was fine and dandy. The world is standing still. It has stood still for centuries. And around the year, in the 11th century, trade once more started to revive, with the pushing back of Islamism and the opening up of trade with the East to the West, and the West to the East. And with the development of commerce, side by side came the development of industry, slowly but surely. That is the development of modern-day capitalism. And any kind of industry or any kind of commerce has to be conducted for profit. Because the capitalists don't go into business because they like the way you part your hair or the way the kind of clothes you wear. They're out to make money, or else they wouldn't be capitalists. They wouldn't have any capital. And the feudal lords were opposed to usury. And the Catholic Church was also opposed to usury, or usury. Because these were the only people that had money, and these were the only people that dealt with the merchants of those days, in the years 1100, 1200, and so forth. And this opposition to rising capitalism, which it amounted to, could only be answered by the Reformation. Now, we can't go into a long dissertation on the Reformation, but to put it very briefly, the Reformation came about because of material conditions. Not because somebody sat down one day and said, you know, I think the Roman Catholic Pope is full of baloney. Not at all. It didn't come about because someone decided that by giving the hocus pocus and so forth, that mysteries were committed, or by throwing holy water around, the devil jumped out of somebody's body and ran back to hell where he belonged. None at all. The Reformation came about because of economic conditions, material conditions. You could not have developing commerce and developing industry side by side with an organization that forbids usury, whatever you call it. That bond had to be broken. You could not have industry and commerce in a society dominated by feudal lords and cardinals and the church that owned the land and created a million and one toll charges. You could not create commerce and industry alongside of private armies by dukes and counts, cardinals and bishops. And don't forget, many cardinals and many bishops were great army leaders, in other words, butchers. That's all they were in those days, in the days of the feudal lords. They were real genuine butchers if they were so-called successful soldiers. And many of the cardinals and many of the bishops were famous as military men. Now, in order for capitalism to develop, they had to destroy this kind of a setup, and that's what precisely happened in Europe. The first great revolt, as we know, took place in Germany. And when the capitalists with the peasantry, tried to push through some reforms against the feudal lords. Luther and his gang turned on the peasantry and butchered them. We know the rebellion in Holland, which resulted in the Dutch Republic. We know the rebellion in England by Cromwell and the Presbyterians, which afterwards became the Congregationalists, and so forth. These countries were freed with the dead hand of feudalism through revolution and given a full swing and freedom to developing capitalism. Out of this contest between feudalism and capitalism, Christianity lost England, Holland, Western Germany, or Eastern Germany rather, Switzerland, and eventually France and Italy, although they claim to represent them today, and we'll show later that they do not. But they lost these governments and they lost the income. They lost the take from England, from a large section of Germany and Holland. And as you know, no religion succeeds unless it collects the money. So if you're going to create any kind of a religion, don't ever make the mistake of not charging the admission at the door, or else you'll be a flop. Now, side by side with the split that took place in Western Christianity came the split with the Eastern Church. That is the Eastern Christians. And this split took place somewhere around 750. But the final was finally driven to its completion in the year 1000. And there was the denunciation, of course, by the Holy Fathers in Rome about the renegacy of the Eastern Church and so forth. Truth of the matter was that the Eastern Church represented a very high civilization. They weren't the heirs to the civilization of Rome, but Rome stood on their shoulders in the first place. The Eastern Church was the heirs to the great glories of Greece. While Rome was on the downshoot, Constantinople was the center of civilization, of Christianity. And precisely because of the rivalry between Rome and Constantinople came the split between the East and the West. Now Christianity, as we know, we'll call it the Christianity, meaning the Western churches, Roman Church, from now on known as the Roman Catholic Church since the split with the East, fought feudalism right down to the last ditch. Even after losing England, even after having the experience of Lutheranism in Germany, after losing Holland, yet the church blindly carried forward the struggle against rising and developing capitalism. But material conditions were against it. They were fighting a losing fight. Nothing could stop the rise of capitalism. And then with the discovery of the New World, the opening of the markets and so forth in the East, came the great French Revolution, the land of absolutism, the land of classical feudalism. And with the defeat of the lords and the nobility came the defeat of the church in France. This was probably the worst blow that the church suffered. And by this time, capitalism had developed to such an extent in Western Europe that with this defeat in France, Roman Catholicism finally woke up and started to think of terms of living in the 19th century instead of back in the 6th century. And it turned itself into the ally and defender of capitalism. Not only that, but it developed under capitalism into the wealthiest organization in the world. Now, when I make these kind of statements, I have all the material here to support them. And if anybody challenges the statement, they're welcome to it. Now, the London Economist, on the 27th of March last year, and you know, the London Economist is not some fly-by-night American publication, but is a publication that has a little credit among literature circles.